This podcast of To the Point is a production of KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com. Support for KCRW podcasts comes from the Southern California Lexus dealers.
From PRI, Public Radio International, and KCRW Santa Monica, this is To the Point.
Is France still France? Hello again, I'm Armin Alney, and this is To the Point from Public Radio International, the daily look at the issues Americans care about most. The French government has invoked new police powers after 12 nights of riots that have produced the worst property damage since World War II. The children of black African, Arab, and Muslim immigrants say they're told they're French, but then treated as outsiders, unaccepted, and unemployed. On To the Point, has France failed to recognize decades of change in its own population? Will fading industrial suburbs become new training grounds for Islamic extremists? Can the grievances be resolved without alienating the nationalist right wing? On Reporter's Notebook later on, will California voters terminate the Terminator? First, here's the news.
Support for To the Point comes from subscribers of KCRW Santa Monica and from the Public Radio International Program Fund, whose contributors include the Ford Foundation and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation.
Hello again, Warman Alney, back with To the Point. The French government has invoked new police powers, but a generation of grievances could take a long time to resolve. On To the Point, we'll update the recent violence and hear contrasting views of the root causes. On Reporter's Notebook, California voters and the future of Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. First, this news update. In Paris last night, there was a lull in the violence, but elsewhere in France, more than 1,000 vehicles were torched and 12 police officers were injured in the 12th night of rioting. Sebastian Rotella is Paris bureau chief for the Los Angeles Times. Sebastian, thanks for joining us. I understand that there was a crisis meeting of the cabinet today. What did they decide?
Hi, Warren. It's a pleasure. The cabinet decided today to go ahead and impose those special powers, mainly a state of emergency and curfew powers that can be invoked around the country to give the authorities the ability to, for example, prevent people of certain ages from being on the street after a certain hour, special search powers, things like that. And the idea is to use it in targeted ways to try and get some of these areas under control. We'll see how it evolves in terms of where it's imposed and how it's enforced.
How unusual are those kinds of powers in France?
Very unusual. It's a law that was created in 1955 that was used first in Algeria during the Algerian War of Independence. It was used in France once before in that period where there was fear that the troubles in Algeria would take place in France. So it was used once in 1958, and it was used once in the French territory of New Caledonia in 85, and that's it. So this is there's been, 13 days of riots, and finally this has been imposed. It gives you a sense of the gravity of the situation.
And also a sense that the government has waited a long time to take these kinds of actions.
That's right. The government, really took this step after it felt that it needed to be done after waiting, after hoping that things, that other measures would bring things under control. But I mean, symbolically and in practice, it's a very difficult and very sensitive matter, and there's a lot of concern and some criticism, particularly on the far left, about the fact that it's been invoked.
Sebastian Rotella, Paris bureau chief for the Los Angeles Times. In today's paper, you write extensively about people you've talked to in the neighborhoods involved and what they say about why they're doing it, what their grievances are. What have you heard?
Well, it's a real mix, and there are some sentiments that are thoughtful and legitimate, in other words, that are maybe opportunistic and less so. But I mean, clearly there are some powerful forces at work and problems that have been building for 3 or 4 decades in the housing projects that are all over France, and particularly among the North African and African communities, the children and grandchildren of immigrants. And these kids are saying, they complain about unemployment, which is certainly very high in these neighborhoods. And most of all, they talk about, sort of an identity crisis and discrimination, a feeling of being marooned between identities, that they're told they are French, but they are not accepted as full French citizens. There's also obviously the more realistic ones will tell you that there's a lot of criminality in those areas, and that's a factor too. That there, to some extent, there are some organized networks that are involved in this. But it really, you get a sense out there of the of the sort of the profound alienation and anger and that exists in these neighborhoods, and that, you know, there were those areas. We used to use the expression "slow motion riot" in the United States about sort of urban problems and urban crime in the 70s and 80s, and I think that's what was going on in those projects in recent years. You always had car burning, you always had confrontations with the police. You just haven't had an explosion this big that has lasted for so long, and you get a sense that all these factors, economic, social, cultural, psychological, have sort of all converged in this moment.
We're going to hear in a moment from one of the deputies that represents one of the suburbs in the National Assembly. What do these young people think about the government?
Well, they have great anger and hostility and resentment of the government, and if you see that, that's manifested in the attacks, which aren't just on the police but are on anything that represents the state, the post offices, daycare centers, gymnasiums, you know, I mean, just anything that represents the state. They feel the government rejects them. They feel the government doesn't care about them. They feel the government is like, you know, is a separate world, a separate planet. There's a figure, the interior minister, Sarkozy, who has become sort of the nemesis of the young, and they particularly sort of accuse him of being sort of their enemy and of discriminating against them and of being behind police abuse of them and whatnot. So you know, there's great resentment of the government, both this specific government and the state in all its manifestations.
So France is thought to be, or I gather French people think of themselves as living in a country that's somewhat indivisible, and yet here is a very large percentage of the population that simply doesn't feel part of it.
I'd say that's right, and to varying degrees. I don't, you know, I mean, not everyone who feels some level of that alienation is on the streets burning things. But that's right. I mean, it's a problem that's ingrained in this community, and it's going to take a lot to resolve. You know, and these housing projects are so they're everywhere in France. They're not just in the big cities. They're in medium-sized cities as well, and they really have become in the worst cases, you know, sort of these parallel, somewhat hostile mini societies, you know, and then the government is really sort of confronting that, both on the level of policing, but also, you know, I think you're going to see a lot of attention, a lot of money, a lot of effort poured into those places.
All right, Sebastian Rotella in Paris for the Los Angeles Times. We'll come back, talk more with you in a moment. In a moment, we're going to talk with Conservative Member of Parliament who represents one of those suburbs of Paris on To the Point.
To the Point thanks Factiva, a Dow Jones and Reuters company, for its use of Factiva.com. With news and information from 8,000 global sources, Factiva is a resource for companies whose continued success rests upon timely strategic news on their industry, competitors, and themselves.
Wormen, I'll be back with To the Point. One of the suburbs of Paris hit by rioters is Yvelines, southwest of the city. In the National Assembly, Yvelines is represented by Jacques Maillard, a conservative member of Jacques Chirac's governing party. Mr. Maillard, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
It is being reported that economic and social problems have been building in these suburbs for years and that successive governments have failed to deal with them. What do you say to that?
Well, it is true there is a social problem. Nobody will deny it. But, you know, social problem eats a lot of French as well, not only in the suburbs. Even if there, unemployment rate could be higher. But I know places where you just have, let's say, French from French origin and not immigrants, where they are also hit by unemployment, which rate is higher than the national one of 10%. But I think that, in fact, today, in those cities, in those suburbs, it has not only to deal with this question of unemployment and social problems. We are facing a genuine criminal organization, and which is a very small minority, but well-organized, and defending its own, let's say, subterranean economy, dealing drugs, stealing. And this, you can say that in almost every suburbs or even quarter of a town like Sartrouville in the Yvelines, which I am the representative, you have maybe 40, 50 guys who are dealing drugs, who have a subterranean economy, and they defend their parallel society. And it started because, of course, there were two youths who were electrocuted, but that's a pretext. It could have started earlier. It could have started later. In fact, it started when the police has already begun to hit their subterranean economy. And we have, in all suburbs around Paris and in other cities, always a strong, hardcore minority which is trying to impose its law on other youths.
Let me ask you this. There are young people apparently involved in this or supportive of it who are saying that they're told that they're French, but they are then not treated equally. You made a distinction between people who are French and people who are immigrants. These are not immigrants. These are people who are born in France, and aren't they supposed to have equality?
Well, first of all, legally speaking, they have full equality. When they are French, you don't bother if they are black, if they are Muslim or Jews, you are French, full stop. It doesn't mean that they have equal chances to go up the ladder, the social ladder. But it is very true that many of them have integrated. If you take my example as a mayor of Maison Lafitte, which is a city next to Sartrouville I mentioned earlier, I have many civil servants in the administration coming from this immigration. I have technicians, I have engineers for computers, so you cannot generalize. I don't say that it is easy for, let's say, a son of immigrants to go up, but he can do it. So, and you have to fancy, this is not all unemployed immigrants who are, let's say, criminals and who breaks and are rioting. So this is not true. You should not amalgamate. There are difficulties. As I said, those difficulties are eating today either French or immigrants, sometimes in the same way. But it is true that for them, because of social, let's say, difficulties, it can be harder. But it's also, it is very true that in the French society today, you have a lot of immigrants who go up the ladder, who create enterprise, who become civil servants, who are even MPs sometimes, and so you cannot generalize. And
right.
I refute those to say we are, let's say, not French, who are second zone Frenchmen. I say you have difficulties, but you have also the choice to come and to go up.
All right. Again, we're talking with Jacques Millard, who represents Yvelines, one of the suburbs southwest of Paris, involved in the rioting. Some of the young people say, you mentioned that there's a reaction in part to a police presence. Some say that they are chased down by the police, that when they say they are French, the police throw their papers on the ground and are scornful of them because they are black, because they are Muslim, because they look different and speak different from others in France. What do you say to that? Is that not going on?
I don't say that there are, you know, no incident with the police as it happens in every police of the world. But I would say we have a very, very accurate public service, which is the police. And, you know, they control things. There is no injury, no dead because of the Polish action. And the only thing, the two youths who were electrocuted is because they went away and by themselves enter an electrical station. And that was their mistake, you know, but the police was 500 yards far away from them.
What do you think it's going to take to stop the violence?
Pardon?
What do you think it's going to take to stop the violence?
I think that with the new powers that the police are going to have, they will have the possibility to control, you know, youths who sometimes seems to be peacefully and cordially and suddenly turn into rioters. And we have the power now to enter the cellar where we in many cases see that cocktail Molotovs are being made. So I think that it will be very quick, and I think that in a couple of days everything will be over. It doesn't mean that every problem will be over, but at least rioting will stop.
How concerned are you about the influence of Islamic radicals in these neighborhoods who might try to turn people against France itself?
Well, I think this is, of course, a question that we have to raise. But up to now, it is true that we have in our suburbs sometimes very radical Islamics, and those are very prudent today. But I will not say that they don't push, you know, youth of 12 and 13 years in front just to make rioting and are, let's say, behind pulling the rope, you see. So I would say that it is an issue which has to be considered, as it is to be considered in, you know, in Britain, where you had bombing made by people who seems to be very well integrated and finally were not. We have a genuine problem with, let's say, radical Islam, and we have to be very vigilant. And we have, of course, we should not amalgamate, but we have to be very vigilant because that's a very big issue for whole countries in the world.
But you think that this violence can be stopped with a police action, that it's not necessary to do anything more to try to deal with the sense of isolation and the lack of acceptance that these young people say they feel?
I did not say that. I said those who are rioting, those who are breaking, those who are burning cars or shops, those are genuine criminals organization members. I think that the results of today's situation is a result of lack of authority which has been developing in France for years and years, which is a post-era 68, you know, where it was said it is forbidden to forbid. So I think that we should install again authority in families, authority at school, and authority in the street. And that will take time because you have to teach from the kindergarten on to have an achievement.
Well, thank you very much, Jacques Millard, with the National Assembly, for joining us today.
Thank you.
Once again, Jacques Millard represents Yvelines, one of the suburbs southwest of Paris where there has been rioting, and he is a member of President Chirac's governing party. He was unable to join us live, so we taped that interview just a few moments before we went on the air. Nadir Dendoun is a young journalist from Saint-Denis, which is another suburb north of Paris. Nadir Dendoun, thank you very much for joining us today.
Yes, hi. So how are you?
I'm well. We heard the representative, Mr. Millard, say that he thinks that there's a lot of criminal activity going on behind this. Before you listen, he came on to listen, I think, he said that he thinks that the drug dealing has a lot to do with what we're seeing and that it's a reaction to police efforts to control that. How do you respond to that?
I think mostly it's because most of the kids here have no hope for to have a good life, you know. Most of the kids have no work, have no job, and that's why it's making them upset. But I think also few of them may be scared of the police who comes to the slums and to... But I think really mainly it's because of they have been treated like second zone citizens for so many years, but they haven't found another way to express their own rage.
Mr. Millard said he agreed that it will take a long time to cope with the problems that are underlying this, but he also said that he thinks that with a tough police presence and the new powers that the government has assumed for curfews and extensive police actions, the violence will be over in a couple of days. Do you think that's true?
Yes, I think it's true, yes. Yeah, you know, most of the police force here are young, are unexperimented police. And I'm not sure if you have heard about the Amnesty International report that went out 3 months ago that showed that the police were very violent and the police are very brutal. And they don't know how to cope with these young kids.
What about the concerns raised by some people about Islamic fundamentalists who may try to recruit a lot of the young people that you mentioned and that you probably know into their cause and turn them against France itself?
Personally, I'm not sure about that. You know, I just cannot say if it's true or if it's not true. You know, I don't have all the proof to like say that. But what I've heard, I've heard lots of people saying that.
All right. Again, Nadir Dendoun is a journalist from Saint-Denis, a suburb north of Paris. Still on the line with us is Sebastian Rotella, the Paris bureau chief for the Los Angeles Times. So we're hearing with these two people, Sebastian, the kinds of or the differences, I guess, is the best way to put it, that you have reported.
Yeah, I think so. I think you do. I mean, everyone agrees there's a problem. People see... some people emphasize causes more on the social side, others focus on the criminality, and I think, you know, the problem is so profound, there's room for both sides to some extent be right. I mean, there's no question that there is a criminal aspect to it and a loose organization. I don't think there's any kind of nationwide criminal conspiracy behind these riots. What is true is that there are small-time gangsters, drug-dealing networks in these projects that have taken advantage of this situation and pushed kids into this kind of thing. And part of that is in response to the police having been tougher recently. But obviously, you know, the social and economic causes we talked about are reality. Unemployment is, you know, rate in some of those areas is you know, and among young kids is 30-40%. So there's this whole mix of problems making this crisis so profound. And Islam, again, I mean, what I've heard from the intelligence officials I talked to who are sort of on the ground is that they do see some isolated specific cases where Islamic extremists who are a force in those projects have been sort of opportunistically taking advantage of the situation to incite violence. But that's not a major factor, they say. What's interesting is to some extent, you know, it's a very modern phenomenon where you have a lot of kids watching TV, inspired to do something, competing amongst each other, communicating by internet, egging each other on by internet, talking on cell phones, you know, an organization that comes together very loosely, spontaneously, but very effectively. And then that's what's been so crazy about it, particularly if you talk to police in the provinces. A lot of it, they say, is just this kind of contagion, that a lot of it is happening because of the information revolution. It's going to take, I mean, I think, yes, probably in a few days with aggressive policing, they could bring it under control, assuming there isn't some kind of new inciting incident. But this problem is going to fester and it's going to simmer in all kinds of ways. And France is going to have to wrestle with it for years and decades to come, I think.
Sebastian Rotella of the Los Angeles Times. Before we go to our break, I want to introduce our next guest, who is Marie Brenner, writer-at-large for Vanity Fair, first reported on these problems in France's suburbs in 2002. Marie Brenner, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Interested in your take on what we heard from the representative of the National Assembly, the kinds of things that he had to say. You've been fairly critical of the French government in its failure to cope sooner with these problems. Do you think that was reflected in what we heard from Jacques Maillard?
Well, what strikes you when you go to France is the formality of the society and the fact that it is such a top-down place, and there is very, very little room for any of these young people to advance. You see this particularly among the young male population, where the unemployment rate is running in some places close to 60%. And the French have had a willful blindness, it seems, to many people, years and years of complete ignoring what was going on out there. And that's the very term they use for these suburbs, out there. I mean, the first attacks were, in many cases, of these young teenagers who, as Sebastian pointed out, are in often just imitating what they see on their satellite dishes that are coming up from the Middle East. The first attacks were directed against the Sephardic Jewish community, the firebombs at the Shul.
Marie Brenner, I'm going to have to interrupt you, and I apologize for that. We'll let you continue your thought in a moment, but we are obliged by time considerations to take a break. We're talking with Marie Brenner of Vanity Fair. Thanks to Sebastian Rotella of the Los Angeles Times. We'll be back in a moment. Continue this conversation. On our notebook, we'll be talking about California's election and Governor Schwarzenegger on To the Point.
Transcripts of To the Point are available from the Transcription Company, 818-848-6500, or on the web at transcripts.net. A CD copy of To the Point is available by calling 1-800-600-5279.
Warman Ali back with To the Point, talking today about the recent rioting in France, some of the worst since World War II. New powers invoked today by the French government, very rare in that country, only once or twice before. Since the war, have such powers been invoked, powers to set curfews, powers to search and stop people that, again, are very unusual in that country. And we're talking about the change in the population over time and whether or not the government has managed to recognize sufficiently what's going on and cope with it, or whether the failure to do that has led to the current situation. We're talking now with Marie Brenner, writer-at-large for Vanity Fair, who first reported on these problems back in 2002. And Marie, you were saying that the first attacks came against Sephardic Jews. What was the nature of those, and what happened next?
Well, there was a series of attacks. The Sephardic Jewish community were really the canaries in the mine shaft in these areas like Saint-Denis and Drancy and Grigny, where all the attacks are going on right now, the firebombs. And it took about 18 months for the French to really react. And it was extraordinary to be there during that period because there was a split-screen reality in Paris. And I think that is very much a piece of this very complex and mysterious puzzle of what's going on. That, again, it was a community that was completely separate. And what strikes you when you first go out there and see it is how very separate it was. I mean, for years, the metro wouldn't even run out there past 10 o'clock at night. And the women of these areas are called the femmes de quartier. You know, they're women of the quarter. They were completely separate. And they realized when they were 12 or 13 years old, often, that they would never get out. It's rare now. There are more opportunities now for the women in the last 2 years. But there was this feeling of utter desperation. And there have been very good reporters in France who have done kind of tests where they've sent in resumes where exactly the same credentials with a French name on it, a Pierre, will get a job interview. But if you send it in with a Mohammed name on it, there will be, I'm sorry, we have no job openings. So I think there are many, many reasons for their rage, which you're now seeing with these firebombings and terrible of catastrophe, which is taking over these areas.
Marie Brenner with Vanity Fair. We've heard from a couple of people in France, a couple of Americans. Pierre Birnbaum is professor of political sociology at the University of Paris and author of The Ideal France. Professor, thank you for joining us today. Professor Birnbaum, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes.
Can you call me? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you fine. Thank you very much. Marie Brenner just described this as a very mysterious situation because it has built up over so long a time and so little seems to have been done directly to cope with it and deal with the people referred to as out there. How do you explain it?
Well, there are a couple of variables which are different, and one has not been mentioned until now, and I think, in fact, it's a crucial one. Obviously, there are questions of unemployment, low salaries, racism, this kind of stuff, since a long time. But what is really new since those recent years is, in fact, that the state is retreating. The state is no more there. As you know, France has been created by the state. The Gaullist period is far away. The state is really retreating completely from every area of society and much more from the suburbs. It doesn't help anymore. It is no more present there. And as you know, those suburbs where everything is happening now has been controlled since many years either by the state or by the communist power, by a strong communist organization since maybe 40 years, 50, 60 years. They were completely controlled by communist association, communist political life, communist trade unions, communist or socialists. And in fact, those communist and socialist organizations, trade unions, local community power are vanishing since maybe 5 years. So my point really would be quite different. It's to outline the fact that those two main powers, either the state through, let's say, the school, the police, and so on, or the communist or socialist organization, trade unions, and so on, are both of them are vanishing. They don't control anymore those territories. And in fact, it allows what is happening now, because all those population of Muslim origins mainly, but also black origins. And there is a black problem since a year or two in France with a coming back of black memory, of black enslavement. There is a specific black riot in contemporary Paris or a suburb. I think that what is occurring is much more linked to this vanishing of the previous power in control of those regions. moment where still, I would say, the memory of the Algerian War is still very strong. You did mention some minutes ago the fact that for the first time, the state is using this law of 1955, allowing curfew, search, and so on, which is amazing. Something really new is appearing in France. And as you know, this law was taken when? It was taken in 1955. What does it mean? It was taken during the Algerian War. It was taken because of the Algerian War in France, the consequences of the Algerian War in France. It means that by several aspects, it's always the French history which is there, either the history of the state, history of socialism, or the history of colonialism. And by many aspects, my answer would be that if those aspects of the problems are not really faced, then nothing will really be settled, because you can send police, you can send whatever. Those questions cannot be really faced so quickly.
Once again, Pierre Birnbaum is a professor of political sociology at the University of Paris and author of The Ideal France. I want to get back to the question of the ideal France and what that might be. But first, let me go back to Marie Brenner with Vanity Fair. Just interested in your take on what Professor Birnbaum said about the vanishing of institutions that have previously shaped these neighborhoods and which he says aren't there anymore.
Well, of course, he makes a absolutely very important point. And I would like to add something on to that, which is it's very difficult for an American audience to sometimes understand the difference in our cultures, the fact that we in America have our melting pot, our affirmative action. We have schools that teach in several languages. And the French have a long tradition of what they call the laissez-faire, the secularism, which is about having everyone in the society being equal. So when you have this population in the schools, the young people feel completely alienated, many of them told me, because their holidays are not celebrated. Their dialects have been outlawed in France, really all dialects since the end of the 19th century. I think that's right, Professor Birnbaum, isn't it? And it makes for a lack of these young people who are the potential violent ones in the society of feeling alienated. I'm very curious about this use of the 1955 law about the Algerian War, because several people have suggested to me today in Paris that this is another way, in essentially, of throwing oil on the fire, because the Algerian War for this population, where the French are so off in the society, so guilty about the level of brutality in the war, to invoke this particular 1955 war law seemed odd to several people that I spoke to today in Paris.
Let me put that question to Professor Birnbaum. What about it? Is this something that might make things worse rather than better?
Well, I'm scared a little bit by what is happening. And as this lady has just said from Vanity Fair, the fact that this law is used, this specific law, it does really mean something. As you know, there are maybe millions of French men nowadays who were in Algeria, who were a part of the Algerian War, who still keep this remembrance of a defeat. It's really the crucial defeat of France in after Vichy, if you want. And it is still very present in the French memory. As you know, there is now, by many aspects, a new way of people willing to be recognized in their identity. And as it has been said previously, French society doesn't really want to recognize different kind of identity. Like the Jews, for instance, it was 2 years. It has taken nearly 2 centuries before Jewish identity was recognized, or Brittany identity, or whatever. And to recognize, let's say, a Muslim identity in French society in this context of the Algerian War is something which which is quite difficult. And I'm really afraid because, obviously, Le Pen and the extremist movement is just waiting for the result. Obviously, there is a large part of the French population which cannot tolerate it, which is extremely against this recognition of this identity, and which is shocked by the presence of the Islam in France, by those kids which are wearing Islamic dresses, this kind of scarf of the Palestinian wearing in Palestine. And really, as you know, next year there will be the presidential election. So there is also a political game in France between Sarkozy, which is, as you know, a candidate for next year presidential election, and Villepin, which is also the prime minister, which is also a candidate for this next presidential election. So both of them are also, by some aspect, linked to the Algerian war. They are a member of this generation, which has been concerned by this war. And Le Pen, obviously, was in Algeria himself. He was in the paratroops, and he fought in the Algerian war. So I'm a little bit scared about what will be happening next year at the presidential ballot, because, as you know, at the last one, Le Pen was second. At the second turn, he was there, and everyone was surprised. So he had no chance to win, but nevertheless, he had 20% of the ballot at the first turn, which was amazing. So, but many aspects, it's not just a question of unemployment, fiscal crisis, and the fact that those youngs are poor and they are facing racism, which is true. Obviously, it's true.
Let me bring in one more guest before we completely run out of time. We've been talking with Pierre Birnbaum at the University of Paris, author of The Ideal France. Patrick Lozes is of African descent and is involved with the Circle of Action, which is a group designed to promote diversity in France. And thank you very much, Patrick Lozes, for joining us. We don't have a lot of time left, but let me ask you, were you born in France? What are your origins? Do you feel French?
I'm not born in France, but I live in France for almost 20 years, so I'm French, and I feel French. And I think clearly you have asked the right question. When you're out of your country, when I'm out of France, what people ask me to show that I'm French, it's only my passport and my identity card. But when I'm inside France, what people want to be recognized as French is not an identity card or passport. It's a local color. And I think clearly this is one of the reason of the anger. When you look at the television, when you look at the National Assembly, when you live in the city, you don't really feel French when you're black. Not because you don't feel this, but people will not recognize you as French, and that means you will not have job, even if you have all the diplomas. You will not get a decent home, even if you have the means for doing it. So clearly, I think this is the real issue.
A moment ago, Professor Birnbaum mentioned Jean-Marie Le Pen, the nationalist conservative in France, has been very opposed to immigration. Are you concerned, Patrick Lozes, about what sort of backlash there might be from people of his persuasion as a result of the violence over the past few days?
I think there is two ways of seeing things. The first way would be that we all will try to walk on the way we live together on the way we discriminate on the discrimination. The other way is what you have mentioned, that people, a lot of people would go and vote for Le Pen. Clearly, I don't fear really this. Just because those people, everybody knows that they wouldn't have any benefit for this situation to stop, that everybody will live in peace, because clearly they are trying to make themselves as fat firemen, but they were the one who were trying to have things come to a burning situation. And the second reason why I'm not really afraid of Jean-Marie Le Pen and Monsieur De Villiers, what are they saying? They're just saying, oh, send all those people back home. But their home is here. They are French.
All right. So, thank you very much. Once again, Patrick Lozes, director of the Circle of Action for the Promotion of Diversity in France. Marie Brenner with Vanity Fair, just a couple of seconds left here, really. But do you think that this is going to lead to a change in the way French people think about what it means to be French?
I couldn't answer that, but certainly I think it will lead to France grappling with some very large questions, such as what to do with their welfare swamp, how to institute a Thatcherite revolution where there is some form of jobs for the population, and simply the large questions of the society of how you assimilate 6.5 million extremely poor Muslim immigrants who are French citizens. And I think this is a watershed moment for France, without question, and it's a kind of unprecedented lens on a possible change in French history.
Well, thank you very much for that perspective. We'll try to follow things in France. Obviously, an enormously complicated situation, and as we just heard, a watershed in the history of France, and perhaps in the rest of Europe as well. Another subject that we'll address on future programs. Marie Brenner with Vanity Fair, thank you very much for being with us. Thanks to Patrick Lozes as well. Thanks also to Professor Pierre Birnbaum at the University of Paris, to Nadir Dendoun, who joined us from Saint-Denis in Paris, and Jacques Millard, the member of the French National Assembly, along with Sebastian Rotella of the Los Angeles Times. Just 2 years ago, his stunning election as governor of California made Arnold Schwarzenegger a Republican superstar with a national profile. But today, his political future may be on the line in a special election he called, despite evidence that it would be unpopular with the voters. More on that in a moment on To the Point.
You can find more information on the program, including archived editions, at www.moretothepoint.com. More to the point, all one word, .com.
Warman Alney back with Reporter's Notebook on To the Point. In today's statewide California election, there are no candidates. Instead, there are 8 ballot propositions. 4 of them are backed by Governor Schwarzenegger, and they represent what's left of what he calls his year of reform. Sherry Bebich Jeffy is a senior scholar at the University of Southern California and a political analyst for KNBC Television in Los Angeles. As always, Sherry Bebich Jeffy, good to have you with us.
Hi, Warren. Nice to be here.
What's at stake today for Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Well, you know, this is Judgment Day for the governor. Basically, what we have is a referendum on the governor without the governor being on the ballot. What is at stake, I think, is how fast he can get out of the blocks for the gubernatorial reelection campaign of 2006. I'm not one of those who believes that should he lose all 4 of the initiatives that he backed very vigorously, he's political toast. You can never say never in politics, but it is clear he will be hurt if he doesn't have at least 1 or 2 initiatives winning today. It's just going to make it all that much harder for him to refocus on the campaign and to refocus on his policy agenda.
His referenda would make it more difficult for teachers to get tenure, would set the spending limits on the state budget, would establish a 3-judge panel instead of the legislature to draw up the district lines, and would require public unions to get mm-hmm. written permission from every member before they could use any of their dues for political purposes. Here he is, a Republican in a blue state, taking on the Democrats in the legislature and the unions. Is that a winner?
No, hasn't ever been a winner, and it just boggles my mind, quite frankly, how he allowed himself to sort of stagger down this path. He may have forgotten or wasn't willing to acknowledge that California is one of the bluest of the blue states, but even beyond that, look, nobody takes on first responders in the wake of 9/11. What was he thinking? Not only because they're powerful interest groups and because they can raise a lot of money and organize, but because, you know, Californians don't look kindly at verbal attacks on nurses, teachers, firefighters, and police. It's astonishing to me.
And yet, of course, all of them are campaigning very vigorously against him.
Yeah.
In fact, the amount of money raised for this election, this includes, of course, a lot of money raised by the drug industry for a couple of other measures on the ballot we don't have time to talk about, but we're talking $250 million or so being spent here in California, and the unions have outspent the governor.
Exactly. Oh, actually, the figure I saw today was it's now at $262 million, and that's not counting what it cost to put this election on. And yes, they are outspending the governor. In fact, I think the governor was surprised that he couldn't maintain the fundraising pace that he has maintained throughout his tenure. And that's one of the reasons he announced early that he would be running for re-election. I think, you know, his contributors, individuals and business groups looked around and said, wait a minute, you know, do you really expect us to put in all of this money to the initiatives when we don't even know we're going to be able to get anything back, when we don't even know whether or not our candidate, Arnold Schwarzenegger, is going to be running for re-election? So I don't think he's raised his goal, but he hasn't raised it at the clip or in the amounts that he's been able to raise previously.
Talking to Sherry Babbage Jeffy, senior scholar at USC and political analyst for KNBC Television in Los Angeles. Well, you said that at the outset that this is not only a referendum on him, but in a sense a first step in his reelection, which he has announced for next year. You don't beat somebody with nobody. What about the possible candidates to run against him?
Oh, you are so right, and that is the mantra that's being floated not only by Republicans but by Democrats. Now, State Treasurer Phil Angelides and State Controller Steve Wesley, who are the two Democrats who have declared, will be highly indignant at being sort of tossed out as nobodies. But the reality of it is that they are not yet well-known. They certainly can't match the governor in charisma, but I'm here to tell you that they can certainly match him in terms of funding. And I don't know how powerful they will be against the governor if, quite frankly, the governor really does run for re-election coming down the line. But the polls indicate they're giving him a fight at this point in time. But let me underscore the fact that polls at this point in time are meaningless.
You know? I could argue that they always are, I suppose, but
let's
not do that, or we wouldn't have anything to talk about.
Exactly. They're always snapshots in time, and this is an eternity away from when we will begin to focus on the gubernatorial campaign.
I didn't mean to say that Phil Angelides and Steve Wesley were necessarily nobodies. They're certainly not well-known in the rest of the country, certainly not of superstar quality like Arnold Schwarzenegger. But I think it'll be interesting to people who are listening around the country to know that he, despite his extraordinary visibility and the fact that he is a household word and name, even in places where they never thought about going to vote, might be challenged by people that they've never heard of before.
Yeah, what else is there? We can talk about the possibility of a Rob Reiner or a Warren Beatty putting their hats in the Democratic ring. But, I mean, I don't think so. I am getting a sense out there that people are beginning to look long and hard at the efficacy of the celebrity governor, the amateur, if you will. They may have had enough. I don't know, but there's just this grousing out there that we're going to have to focus on.
And one of the things, of course, that people don't like, apparently, about the governor is that he called this election in the first place. Mm-hmm. Even the polls that say that people are more interested than you would expect them to be in an election that has no people on it, but only these rather complicated initiatives, they're also saying they didn't like the election in the first place. So I guess a lot will depend on how the governor does, not just in the vote on the initiatives, but the perception issue.
Well, exactly. And he's going to have, if indeed he doesn't win any of his initiatives or wins only one or two of his initiatives, and the two most important, which are the budget reform and redistricting, seem to be going down. He's going to have to spin very hard by saying, we've started, let's get to it, let's move, I'm back, I'm going to talk to the Democrats, I'm going to listen to you. If voters believe that, he'll be able to begin to reposition himself. If it doesn't resonate with voters, and we just don't know, he's going to be in very deep trouble.
Also worth pointing out to our listeners around the country that the campaign against the governor has featured President Bush. And in fact, there's one TV commercial where the two of them are standing together and a heart is drawn around the two of them, suggesting, of course, a relationship that probably doesn't exist. The governor hasn't visited with the president when the president has been in the state of late. But that's just another factor in this election. Sherry Babbitt Jeffy, is always good to talk with you.
Thank you.
Senior scholar, School of Policy and Planning and Development at USC, a political analyst for KNBC Television. Today's program produced by Katie Cooper, Cameron Radziner, and Ileana Justice, Technical Director Mike Newport. You can listen online anytime at moretothepoint.com. I'm Warren Alney. Join us again for To the Point, produced live as a co-production of KCRW Santa Monica and Public Radio International.
PRI, Public Radio International.
You've been listening to KCRW's To the Point. KCRW offers more than 20 podcasts, including Left, Right, and Center, our provocative, up-to-the-minute, witty confrontation over politics, policy, and popular culture, with Matt Miller, Robert Scheer, Tony Blankley, and Arianna Huffington. Check out the podcast of Left, Right, and Center at kcrw.com.